when the United States retreats from the world stage, when we pull back, when we don't project strength, that's when our adversaries take advantage of us. And we're seeing this. We're seeing ever since the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, we saw Russia invade Ukraine. We've seen, you know, Iran-backed terrorist organizations go after our greatest friend and ally in the Middle East, who, quite frankly, I would argue that because the United States has projected weakness under this current administration, Iran has seen this as an opportunity to go after the United States because they know we won't hit back, because we don't want to escalate.
Welcome to Political Contessa. I'm Jennifer Nassor, and this show is here to support your interest in center-right politics, policy, and breaking news. Listen in and discover how to awaken your inner ideal candidate, and if you're ready, how you can jump in and change the world as a runner or a supporter. Welcome to Political Contessa. If you or a friend have ever considered running, or you know a woman who should, I've got something just for you. My quick guide called Secrets from the Campaign Trail. It will show you 5 signs to tell you you're ready to enter the political arena. To get these tips and learn about all new podcast episodes and ways to get involved, head over to politicalcontessa.com. Hello, and welcome to Political Contessa. I'm Jennifer Nassor, and I am your Political Contessa. Today, I have with me someone to talk about the Republican debate, the third Republican debate. So I have joining me today, Morgan Vina. Morgan served as chief of staff and senior policy advisor to U.S. permanent representative to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, from 2017 to 2019. During Morgan's time at the U.S. mission to the United Nations, Morgan served as the key advisor to the ambassador's policy development and executive team and managed the ambassador's priorities on the UN management budget and reform initiatives. Morgan started off before Team Haley. She worked on Capitol Hill, advising U.S. Senator Bob Corker, who is the chairman of Senate Foreign Relations. Morgan is also a visiting fellow at the National Security Institute at George Mason University, Anton Scalia School of Law, and formerly an adjunct fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Oh, I love that. That is one of my favorite things, because democracy is totally at risk right now. So Morgan, thank you for being here with me today.
Thanks for having me, Jen.
It's awesome. It's always amazing. I know all these fabulous women from different realms of things I'm involved in. And then it's not until I actually start reading their bio, am I like, holy crap, this is actually a really cool powerhouse woman. So it's super exciting to, to have you on. But for purposes of this, I want to talk about the debate. And I want to talk about winners and losers and what we see going forward. So what was your view from this week?
Well, first, Jen, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I'm just so thrilled to be here. I'm a longtime listener and just really, really an admirer of all of your work. So this was the third debate in the presidential campaign. The next one is going to be in December. But this third one, I got to say, Nikki swept it. This is the third debate in which I really think she was sort of the undeniably clear winner here. The debate was specifically focused on national security, and particularly in the wake of the just absolutely horrific terrorist attack by Hamas against Israel. I think this really offered Nikki an opportunity to display her national security bona fides. As permanent representative to the United Nations, Nikki was a stalwart defender of Israel. She had Israel's back every day, particularly in the UN Security Council and against the UN, against those who would commit extreme bias and, I would argue, anti-Semitism against Israel and the UN Human Rights Council. Nikki had Israel's back. And so I think this really offered her an opportunity to talk to the American public about that. She particularly demonstrated a lot of strength when it came to Ukraine. I think the other candidates are just, they just come across as very, very, inexperienced when it comes to sort of that space. They may have a lot to say about the economy or tech policy, or Governor DeSantis clearly, like Nikki, is a governor and can talk about what he's done for his state. But when it really comes down to hardcore national security, I mean, no one compares to Nikki on that stage.
Not even close. I don't know if you heard this, but post-debate, Vivek was being interviewed, not that night, but the next day. And one of the comments that he made that I found interesting and a little bit politician-like confusing was that foreign policy experience is not the same as foreign policy wisdom.
I think that's fair. No, I think that's fair. I will say, before coming to the United Nations, Nikki was very open about her lack of national security or foreign policy credentials. In her book, With All Due Respect, she actually talks about when Reince Priebus came to her, offering her, first they talked about Secretary of State. She just turned that down. She's like, no. And then they offer up the permanent representative to the United Nations position. And she has such a brutally honest quote, and he has just like, Ryan's, I don't know what the United Nations does. All I know is that everyone hates it. And she's not wrong.
Right.
Not wrong there. But I think she may not have known about the United Nations, about multilateralism, about just the national security just world as much as, you know, maybe some others out there. But she knew how to lead as a governor. She had that executive experience. She knew how to lead, and she's smart as hell. And so this is material that you can learn, particularly when you hire a really good team. Brush my shoulders off.
Yeah, I was going to say, like you, exactly.
But no, I mean, she knew what she was doing. She knew how to lead, knew how to put a really good team together. And so I think when it really comes down to it, she had really good instincts, and she had came from a really good foundation of principles and how the United States needs to be strong and how we need to lead. And to do that, we have to project strength abroad. And quite frankly, he just doesn't get that. No. That just doesn't register in his mind.
No. I think he just likes to spew made up facts. I mean, it's almost as if he was never educated on history, on world history, when he's up there and he's talking. And that's why I thought it was interesting that he said that, because I'm thinking, You have neither foreign policy wisdom nor foreign policy experience. And that is, I mean, I think as a governor, one, you get to, and the thing with Nikki that I like to, so I'm a political person, right? I've spent my life in politics and campaigns and government and all that. So for me, and I was a party chair, so I look at people running for office very holistically, what they bring to the table from what they have done in the private sector and what they have done, if they have done anything in the public sector. And her experience, both in the state legislature in South Carolina as a governor and then in the UN, when you take all of that experience and you combine it, like you were saying, she's smart as hell, right? So as governor, she had intuition. There were things that she knew were right and wrong. There were things that she knew worked and weren't going to work. And so she was able to bring that over to the UN while learning about what the UN did and what her role was. Her being able to experience what it was like on the Gaza Strip, right? And seeing firsthand, I think puts her in a very different position. And that came across very clearly the other night on the stage. She is a foreign policy hawk, right? And it's like, we have been missing that in our presidents, I think, for quite some time, in having anyone who actually has any experience and any understanding of foreign policy.
I completely agree. And not to sort of get down sort of the policy space, because I know that's not the focus of the conversation today. But I think what Nikki understands that a lot of political candidates don't today is that when the United States retreats from the world stage, when we pull back, when we don't project strength, that's when our adversaries take advantage of us. And we're seeing this. We're seeing, ever since the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, we saw Russia invade Ukraine. We've seen, you know, Iran-backed terrorist organizations go after our greatest friend and ally in the Middle East, who, quite frankly, I would argue that because the United States has projected weakness under this current administration, Iran has seen this as an opportunity to go after the United States because they know we won't hit back because we don't want to escalate, right? And so Nikki recognizes the power that and strength that the United States has, not only defends us at home, but defends our partners and allies, including Israel.
1,000%. So again, you and I could probably have a policy discussion on this for hours, right? But what I try to explain to my friends who are not in politics, maybe don't even watch the debates, right? So my listeners, I don't know what people have watched or what they read and where people get their information from. So I try to give factual information despite my bias for Nikki. It is all factual information with my bias. But the way I try to explain this situation that you said, right, about us retreating from the world stage, it's like parents leave for the weekend and leave their teenagers at home and say, here are the keys to the Porsche. Don't have a party, don't have friends over, make sure you lock the door and take the dog out. And then they're shocked when they come home and Project X went on in their house and the whole neighborhood burned down, right? Like that is the only way I could explain it in the most simplistic terms as far as what happens when the U.S. goes away on vacation, maybe it's to Rehoboth, who knows, and not paying attention. And then all of a sudden, all the bad actors say, hey, there's no one home, right? And we see that on social media, which is not regulated, and you see bad actors come up and bad things happen. You see it overseas. And I think that that's why we need real leadership, right? That's why leadership actually matters. That's why experience actually matters. It's not a soundbite for Twitter. Right? You and I can do that. You can do it on your podcast. I could do it on my podcast. It's a soundbite. That is not what leadership is. Leadership is taking that experience and knowledge and also understanding you don't know everything and that there's always room to grow and to learn. And I think that that's what Nikki shows every single time she's out there on the stage, is that she's listening to the people. When she's on the ground in Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina, and she's talking to voters, she's listening and she's reacting from not only what she knows and she knows is best, but also what she's hearing from other people. And I think that's a really important trait in a leader, in not thinking that you know everything. And I think that there are some folks on that stage, DeSantis and Vivek specifically, that think that they just know everything and they're just going to, I don't know what they're going to do, but I don't feel comfortable that their leadership would be the right leadership for right now at this time when we really need someone to pull us out from a burning building. It's Nikki, and she proved that in every question the other night that she answered. Moving on from foreign policy, was there anything, we know some stand, I want to talk about the standout moments, but we'll talk about the blooper reel a little bit later. But was there anything that you think that the moderators missed asking?
Well, I was disappointed they didn't give her an opportunity sooner to talk about the China piece. Governor DeSantis took a knock against her, and it was very, very pointed. And I think it was a mistake for the moderators to let that go without providing Nikki an opportunity to respond sooner. And she called them on it. Look,
which was phenomenal that she did. Yeah,
no, absolutely. And I'm glad she circled back to that because I think it's really important, as Nikki has talked very, very clearly about Chinese investment in the United States, buying up land, particularly next to U.S. military installations. This is a real problem. And Nikki talks about this a lot on the campaign trail. And I think it's really important because we are seeing Chinese influence not just project power across, you know, lower and middle income countries, but here in the United States. And particularly at the state level, Nikki called DeSantis out specifically on Chinese investment in Florida. DeSantis needs to be very careful about this moving forward and talk. And I think it was a mistake for him to go after Nikki here because it exposed his own vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. And I think even Governor Christie, I mean, I know he needs to also sort of go about, you know, Chinese influence in New Jersey, right? And I think it's just something that I think governors need to be particularly attuned to here and have a better answer to, because DeSantis just wasn't really able to come back with anything when Nikki called him on that. And again, scrubbing his website needs to.
Right. That, as someone who has been an advisor on campaigns, it's that thing that you tell candidates all the time. Hey, listen, you need to go back. You need to make sure that anything you say, anything you're attacking someone on, do your own background check. The fact that he just scrubbed his website, the fact that, I mean, when he came out with that the last time, and then Nikki's campaign was responding to him being deceptive, you would think that he would figure out that was not a good route to take because he's being deceptive. He's acting desperate. That was such a obvious, desperate attempt to nail her with something that actually it's him, right? And so in a world of being able to Google and to fact check, it's amazing that he would even go there, right? And he was called out on it from the last debate, from the second debate when he started in on it, and every single news source called him out on it. And so it was a very interesting moment, and he couldn't come back from that. And that's what you see in the polls, right? The New York Times poll this week was also about how she's been steadily the winner the entire time in all of these debates, where some of them have crisscrossed up and down, and who's no one can beat her because she's being factual. She's being honest. She has done her homework. And it's really interesting to see them on the debate stage and watch that he didn't have anything to say. I was pissed off that the moderators didn't allow her the opportunity. But I will say, because they didn't allow her the opportunity, and I've had this conversation with a few people, she showed her resilience. She showed her class. She showed that she was able to wait her turn, right? And you could see on her face that she wanted to respond, but she was not going to be rude and jump in and start yelling and screaming. And I think that part was, they actually may have done her a favor because she was able to show that's what a leader is, right? If she's on the world stage and she's having conversations with foreign leaders, she is not going to be throwing bombs and ripping into them. She's going to wait and do it with class and with respect. And I think that was what I saw. And I tell people all the time, when you're watching a debate, shut the volume off on the TV, shut off the audio, watch their body language. Watch what they are actually communicating in their eyes, in their faces, in their hand gestures. And if anyone shut the audio off at that moment, you could see she just was so poised. And those are the moments that I think, because you could get into the policy debate, but you also want to see how they're going to react.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think showing restraint really demonstrates and separates the varsity from the JV.
Well, she's the adult in the room, right? They are all playing in a sandbox and she's being the adult.
And one thing I noticed, and I know I saw on Twitter, others did too. I think the NBC cameraman actually did Nikki a huge solid here, very subliminally, very subtly here. Because at one point when she was talking, I forget which question she was addressing, but I was very distracted in the background by Vivek and Tim Scott, chatting and laughing and having like a side conversation while she was answering a question. And I think I was sort of like, what is going on here? It just demonstrated like two good old boys, you know, disrespecting a candidate who's giving an answer during a debate. And I don't think that was intentional, but at the same time, I was kind of like, huh, that's interesting.
But exactly.
Like little snippets, right? They really sort of betray some of these candidates in many ways and prop others up. And I did think that was, it was very subtle, but it was something that I noticed a lot of people picked up.
Well, didn't they fist bump?
I heard that too. I saw that. I didn't see it myself, but I did see people mention that on social media.
Yeah, it was. I was like, that didn't just happen. And then I started seeing it on social media. I'm like, wait, what? No, that actually happened? Holy cow. I thought it was an illusion that I saw.
I know. I just like, screenshot that. I think it makes Nikki look like the adult in the room in which she is.
Yeah.
And as I said, it separates the JV from the big dogs in the room.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was definitely amazing. So I'll do the blooper reel before I get into another part of this that is something that I think she's a leader on. But so there were a couple of really interesting moments in the debate that I thought, again, going back, I think respect is something that is getting lost today in society as a whole. And we need our leaders to show more decorum and more respect, because if you are truly a leader, people are looking up to you. And this is a big problem I have with Trump, is that he's so disrespectful, right? That I feel like people, I know it, here in Boston, once Trump became president, more people were giving people the finger, more people were just so nasty. I mean, and Boston is not known for its great love of anyone. but people got more nasty, which I didn't think was actually possible. So you know, I look at our leaders and I think it's such a failure on their part not to command more respect. So from the very beginning of the debate, Vivek went after NBC. He went after Kristen Welker. He went after Nikki. He started off and he went after Ronna McDaniel. Now, Ronna has nothing to do with Vivek as a former party chair. As a party chair, you cannot endorse anyone. You have to give everyone a level playing field. You can't say, I'm hand selecting. If there's a primary, there's a primary. You kind of have to stay out of it and you just support the party the whole way through until there's a nominee. The fact that he named her and he went after NBC at the very beginning of the debate when they asked him to basically do his intro. I have never seen anything like that before. I mean, I thought that set the tone of where he was going, which also, I was trying to think of something like, I love Desperate DeSantis. I was trying to think of something like viral, like I need a word for Vivek because I couldn't think of something for him that was perfect enough, right? Because he was disgusting. And just the way that he started off, I left such a bad taste in my mouth. And I'll tell you, one of my daughters is a senior in high school. She goes to school yesterday. We had this conversation about the debate the night before. And when she went to school, all of her classmates were talking about how disgusting Vivek is and how much they don't like him and how he shouldn't be out there. And I think that that's really interesting for a bunch of high school girls to be talking about a presidential debate and how repulsive they thought that man was. So that was my first thing. So I'm going to give you a chance to comment on that. Then we could go to the next one.
You know, he is the gift that keeps on giving. I mean, he's just alienating everyone. And it's
everyone. Every campaign should send him flowers, right? Flowers and a box of chocolate.
It's like, did Nikki pay him to say this? Did we have to shell out to him to like tee Nikki up like this? Because it's just too easy, right? But no, I mean, seriously, I think he's doing himself no favors. And guess what? Keep talking.
Right, exactly.
Keep talking.
Keep hitting people like that. The other thing he did that I, as moms, right? This is, and I don't think it has to do with being a mom. I think if you're a dad, it's the same thing. The fact that he went after her daughter, that is the number one. And that was what I had tweeted out as soon as he said it. Never, ever go after someone's child. That is the number one political rule. Families are out of it. You, as the candidate, put yourself out there to run for office. Your family is not involved in this at all. Especially, I mean, it's one thing if you're Joe Biden and Hunter Biden and Jim Biden, and this is talking about TikTok, and you bring in her daughter. And I mean, if the amount of restraint she showed that moment, holy cow, because I would have taken my shoe off and swatted him in the head with it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he's also lucky that Michael is deployed overseas and it was not in the audience. You'd meet him after out back after the debate. But look, again, like, he activated every single mom out. It triggered every single mom out there by going after Rena. It was completely uncalled for. And look, the Republican Party has a women problem to begin with, right? Republican Party has a problem. They are having trouble appealing to the suburban white woman voter. And this is why. This is why, because you say stupid shit like that. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Apologize. No. You can. I do it all the time.
For real here. But I mean, why would you do that? Like, have you not seen the polling? And I think the only answer I can think of is he just knows he has no chance in hell.
Right.
And he's just sort of going on a scorched earth campaign here and trying to level as many blows against the most viable candidate out there as possible. And so, again, I think you're right. Nikki demonstrated an incredible amount of restraint. But I mean, you're looking for a hashtag or a new name for him. I think Rama Scummy makes pretty.
Oh, I like that. That is good. That's a good one. All right. So,
but yeah, no, I think he, again, he's a gift that keeps on giving. But again, this is why Republicans have a woman problem. This is why they can't attract women voters.
I mean, so now you bring me to my last one. We'll go to Nikki on this, but I'm going to point this out. The Republican Party has a gigantic problem with women, which is totally understandable. Women are going to college and being educated at a much higher rate than men are right now. My daughter goes to a university down in the South. There are 60% women, 40% men. This is happening in universities all around the country. So now, what do you do? Do you keep going back to the 1950s, or are you going to move forward and move forward with the times? And I think that one of our problems has been the response to abortion. This is a very tough issue. It is a very personal issue. I feel as though men in our party need to stop responding to this issue unless there is a response that everyone can kind of gather around. And Vivek responded after Nikki during the debate. He responded after her. I want to talk about her response, but before I do that, I just want to say that as a man, I was so horrified. I was taking notes during the debate. I was so horrified, I actually dropped everything. And I was like, I'm sorry, what did he just say? Because it was something along the lines of, men have an equal right to determine whether a woman has an abortion or not. And I'm at a loss of words. I can't even imagine that a man who is on the Republican primary stage, the day after Republicans got whacked in key states, in Ohio, in Pennsylvania, in Virginia, in Kentucky, where abortion was on the ballot. And he has the nerve to go out there. So if he didn't lose women with the hitting on Nikki's daughter, then he absolutely lost the entire female vote when it came to that issue.
Yep. No, absolutely. I think, look, I'm not going to talk about his comments because I think that they're not worth focusing on because they just completely alienate women. I want to talk about Nikki's comments.
And that's where I wanted to get to, was her comments, because that's the response that needs to be canned, that everyone should rally around.
Exactly. I mean, that needs to be the Republican Party platform when it comes to the abortion debate.
Yes.
As women, as moms, this affects us so directly. And while I myself am pro-life, unapologetically so, I don't want to judge others. I have friends who have had abortions. I have had friends who have had very challenging pregnancies, and quite frankly, have had to take abortion medication to and get rid of their unviable pregnancies. And it's horrific. No one wants to see a friend, a mother, a daughter go through this. And it's the thing is that no one on that stage except Nikki can talk about that with any credibility.
Yeah, exactly.
And she, as someone who just, I think, deeply cares about people and can relate to women who are going through these difficult decisions, she is just so well placed to be able to have these conversations in a very practical way and find solutions to this, and that really sort of get to both sides in many ways. And so I'm so proud of her for sort of taking the lead on this. There's no one out there that can say that she cannot talk about this with credibility. She is by far and away the only person that is on that debate stage that has any idea of what it means to A, be a woman and go through some of these really, really difficult choices. And so I give her so many plaudits for that.
Oh, so you know what it is? The conversation could be so uncomfortable, right? She takes away the uncomfortable aspect of it, and she just puts it in very under. And so I've had conversations with members of the press on the identity politics part of this race. I am not supporting Nikki because she's a woman. I'm supporting her because she is the most competent, capable, brilliant person, leader that we could possibly have. That's why I'm supporting her. The compassion, though, comes in, and the understanding comes in because she is a woman. And she has one of the most wonderful parts of being a woman are our relationships with people and being able to see the world in a very multidimensional way. Men don't have those same level of relationships, of having a friend cry on your shoulder, of a friend come to you with a massive problem. And maybe it's a generalization, but I think for the most part, we women, in you snuggle with your friend when you're young and you build those relationships. And as adults, we are able to have those tough conversations that are heartbreaking. And regardless of our own perspective on the issue, I could never, ever judge anyone else for making a decision. And again, what you said, every woman has a friend who has been in that position. That is not something that 99.99% of women take lightly. They take it very seriously. And for the response to be so harsh and cold is why we keep losing. And it's because the men don't want to address it, because it's a third rail issue. They don't understand it. And I don't know when dad started being informed that their daughters were having abortions, right? Like, is that a normal conversation? I don't know, in 2023. But for women and for girls, this is something that you have always heard and you know about. And I just think that when Nikki says, hey, listen, there's not going to be a federal ban, don't lie to people, right? That's an honest statement. Right? We haven't had 60 votes in the Senate in 100 years. And so don't start telling people, oh, we're going to have a federal ban, because that's BS. And they're just making it up, right? Because they know it's going to inflame the base. And so I think what we need is a more compassionate response to this, to bring women back, because we are seeing time and time again on the ballots over the last 2 years, that as soon as abortion hits that ballot, we lose, because women don't want men telling them what they actually know to be true. Because regardless of, and I say this, like I said this to Nikki when I first spoke to her, I wish that we Republicans could rebrand this whole pro-life, pro-choice thing and just say, we're all pro-choice. We're all pro-choice. You have the choice for life. and you have a choice to make a very difficult decision, right? And if you're picking that life choice, we Republicans, we believe in helping people out, pulling you up by the bootstraps and putting you on a good path, then make sure that when women choose to have children, there's better adoption, easier adoption, not as expensive to go through that process. Make sure if they decide that they're keeping their children, as when I know, childcare costs, holy cow, right? Like you can't even, there's just, it's so hard. You throw on being a single mother onto that. How about early education? Why don't we talk about having better education for kids for when they're young? So that way we stop the pipeline of the where you don't have a choice and you end up going that prison pipeline because you didn't have that early education. There are so many things that we could do, but it's just much easier, has been much easier for all the guys to just say no and shut it down than to say that there are some viable choices and policies that we could implement that will make people feel better and look at their choices, right? And so I think that the Democrats do a really amazing job on this issue of pulling at heartstrings and making it so black and white. And it's not. It is really a multidimensional, multifaceted issue that needs to be addressed with some compassion, because I don't think either of the fringes are being compassionate on it. Nikki, though, her response, phenomenal.
Yeah, I think that's just so beautifully said, Jen. I couldn't say it better myself.
Right, because we're two women. And two women in Republican politics. It's crazy. They never asked us. But that's why we have Nikki, right? So she could get out there and she could talk about it. I've told all my friends to Google and to YouTube her response on it, because I think it's super powerful. And I think that, again, when I look at her, she has the domestic experience, she has the foreign policy experience, and she comes at everything from a very different perspective, a perspective as a wife and a mother and a daughter of immigrants and a governor and an accountant and a UN ambassador, right? And it's like, God, how the level of experience and knowledge is just so overwhelming to me. I did a podcast on this months ago. I've been in politics since I was 19. My first campaigns I worked on, I was 19 years old. I'm much, 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 much older. And actually, as a matter of fact, I always say how long I've been in politics. And the other day I said it to someone and I'm like, actually, I've been saying that for like the past 4 years. I'm going to stop saying how long I've been in politics and just say it's been since I was 19. And so I did this podcast, and believe me, like I have so much love for many of the men that I have had the good fortune of working on their campaigns, whether it was Mitt Romney, Scott Brown, Charlie Baker, George Pataki, Al D'Amato. I mean, I have worked on so many amazing campaigns for people. Peter King, former congressman from Long Island. These men could not be more respectful, more amazing, more interesting and experienced and deserved every opportunity that they had. However, Nikki Haley is absolutely like the one that I said, holy cow, I actually have like fallen in love with. This is my person. And to get to that point where you have seen so much and worked for so many people and been around so many of them, to get to a point where there is a person who, listen, no one is perfect, right, in any relationship. But I looked at her and I said, holy cow, this is absolutely, I will never find anyone like her again in my lifetime that I agree with. And I feel safe knowing that she would be our president of the United States. And it makes me feel safe. And it gives me hope for my daughter's futures that the world is going to be in a better direction than it is right now.
Again, beautifully said. I think back to the 2012 Republican National Convention, as when I, Morgan Vinia, as a very young professional, first sort of saw Nikki Haley, listened to her, learned who she was. And she got on that convention stage and she just delivered the most beautiful address. And I still remember, I don't know if it was gold in person or whether, but it came across as like this beautiful, crisp, cream white, golden suit.
Yep.
And she just delivered this beautiful address about the future of the Republican Party. And I was just sort of, wait a second, like, she's amazing. We're going to see her again. Never in a million years did I think she would be my boss.
Isn't that cool?
I would work for her. And then when I had the opportunity, when President-elect Trump nominated her to be a USUN perm rep, she came to the Senate. I was sort of that congressional staff. I was that Senate staffer that was in charge of vetting her and making sure, you know, she setting up the hearing and all of that. And I got to know her through that process. And she was nothing but just kind and gracious and professional and eager to learn. I've never had someone who asked me questions about multilateral policy and recommendations for initiatives she should take at the UN. I think she was horrified when she learned just how bad it was, actually. and so I think she was just more about in awe and just sort of like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a lot. But no, in reality, she was just, I was just so impressed with her. I just, to seeing her on that convention stage and then across a conference table from me and
in
an office building, I was just like, whoa, I was sort of starstruck, but at the same time, just kind of like, she wants to learn. She wants to rock this job. And I was like, I've gone through, gosh, probably over 100 Senate confirmations. And she was the one nominee that I saw that I was just very eager to learn. She listened and she cared. She didn't come in thinking she knew everything, right?
Right.
And she was going to project this very rigid, this plan of action at the UN. No, she wanted to listen. She wanted to learn what Congress had to say and sort of feed that into sort of her own way of thinking about how she should, what her priorities should be at the UN. And so I was just so grateful for that opportunity and was even more grateful that, you know, she hired me when I asked her for a job.
That's a really cool story, by the way. I can't even imagine having her as my boss. I think that would just be like a career highlight. And then you're like, okay, so I actually had my bucket list career. And how do you even top that? I mean, after being working for her, I just think that's so cool. It's funny. I also, at the 2012 convention, I had just had my last daughter and I had just resigned as being chair of the Mass Republican Party. And I had said to someone, I really want to meet her because of her convention address. And they bring me down to meet her. She's governor. And I'm like, holy cow. I'm starstruck with her. She looks at me and someone tipped her off that I was coming. And so no, I didn't even need to introduce myself. I started saying, "Hi, Governor, I'm Jen." And she grabbed me and gave me this gigantic hug. I was like, oh my God, what? Did she just hug me? And so I took a picture. And for years, my picture with her was on my website of my organization that I have, because I just thought that she was the most amazing, warm, welcoming politician I've ever met. And it just seemed absolutely unbelievable that
it's so authentic.
It's so authentic though, right? And so, and that is what's so cool about seeing her on that debate stage. That is who she is. It is not a performance. And I tell people all the time, she's great on stage, but holy cow, you see her in a room live and talking to people and taking questions from people and her thoughtful responses. And there's no question she won't take. There's nothing she walks away from. That's a really, really impressive trait to have.
Right? It, truly, true. I get questions all the time, actually. After they see Nikki on stage or they meet her at a campaign event or something, and they'll ask, "Is she really like that behind closed doors? Is she really like that?" Absolutely. What you see is what you get with her. And I love that. She is so real. She is, as I said, incredibly authentic. And I mean, what I love to see too is when people actually make that connection. When she goes to Iowa, New Hampshire, she actually does the old school retail politics, right? That is her strong suit, because she connects with people because she is so authentic.
It's amazing. I hope everyone gets to have an opportunity to meet her at some point, because she is just a remarkable person. And I don't know, I've seen underdogs before, and underdogs come out and you can't underestimate them because they end up winning. And I think her, what she says all the time is so phenomenal. Don't underestimate me, right? It's like the motto for everyone to live by who has been underestimated by people, that you can't do this, you can't do this. And I think we see it in the poll numbers. We see it in the response she's getting from people. And I think ultimately all of us are going to be very excited for this to actually vote, which is one thing that I hope people actually do, because I know here in the great elitist state of Massachusetts, no one actually goes to the primaries and votes, so, which is unfortunate. So hopefully people are going to vote. But I think ultimately she will be our presidential nominee. And the Democrats, they can put up anyone they want. I don't think it's going to be Biden. And I think it's going to be Newsom, or it's going to be someone younger. And because they're paying attention to what's going on our side, and they know that they can't win with the team that they have. So I think it's pretty exciting. And I think we're on the right side of history on this one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think Nikki, the momentum she's building is real. We are seeing in the polls in Iowa and New Hampshire, that's real. And I don't really see it slowing down. And I truly think that she's got this momentum, and it's just only a matter of time before the American people actually see her as the most viable option in terms of beating whoever the Democratic candidate is in 2024.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can feel it. Like, you and I have been around long enough where you can kind of feel the ground shaking. And those grassroots are actually really, really strong, and nothing to take for granted.
Absolutely. And look, I'm doing ballot access in Virginia. I'll just say this. There are not many, you know, politicians or candidates I would do ballot access for. With Nikki, it's sort of like, doesn't matter what you did previously, doesn't matter what your title was, or how much you were paid, or where you are on the hierarchy. Everyone does the work. Everyone works. This is a team effort here. And so, taking that to heart, I go out and I talk to voters and get their signatures on the petition to get Nikki to qualify in Virginia. And you wouldn't believe the number of Democrats that actually say, actually, yeah, I'd love for her to be on the ballot.
It's amazing, right? Yeah, that's...
Yeah, and they just see it as, honestly, I think they can relate to her in many ways, particularly right. The women. They can relate to her, and they just see her as someone that demonstrates true leadership. And that's honestly what we need right now in this country.
That's a phenomenal way to end, because that is exactly what we need in this country. And that's what I think the world needs, right? Is for the US to get back on track and to show that there is an adult in the House who is not going to allow our friends around the world to be bullied and attacked the way that has been going on for some time now. So, Morgan, I also forgot to put in my intro of you that both you and I are regional chairs for Women for Nikki, which is probably, that's my bucket list. I'm like, there's nothing else I can do. I'm done after this. this is the highlight of my life, being able to talk to really phenomenal people around the country who are involved in this effort, and to work with someone like you so closely on getting Nikki elected is really something that is a treat to me. And it's true, there's no job that's too small for any of us to do on this campaign, because it's so important.
Yep, absolutely. And I'll just one last plug here, joinwomenfornikki.com. We are a nationwide coalition, have representation in every state. So if you are listening to this and you like what you've heard, go to joinnikkihaley.com and join the Women for Nikki Coalition.
Perfect PSA. Morgan, thank you so much for being with me here today on this episode of Political Contessa.
Thanks so much for having me, Jen.
It has been a great conversation on debate number 3 and my favorite topic ever, Nikki Haley for president. So as Morgan said, please make sure that if you like what you heard today, if you like what you saw in a debate, if you like a TV ad, if you're just interested, please go to NikkiHaley.com and sign up, because Morgan and I will track you down, find you, and bring you into the fold like so many other women and men around the country that are supporting Nikki Haley. And so thank you, my listener. I appreciate you being here with me today on Political Contessa. I'm Jennifer Nassor. I'm your Political Contessa. Stay happy, healthy, and safe.
Thanks so much for listening to Political Contessa. For all the ways to listen and to get the inside scoop on what's happening in center-right politics for women like us, head over to politicalcontessa.com.